where they thought a patrol might be. In the quiet, it was impossible for a person to truly disguise his or her position in a wag, but at least with no lights, it would take longer to locate, unless it was already known where it was headed. Jack smiled as he readied for attack, his lips drawing back over vulpine teeth. His Colt Python was still tucked in his camo pants. Speed at this point was essential. If he needed an immediate weapon, he always had a leaf-bladed knife ready to palm. The wag rolled to a halt, and the albino heard a muttered exchange between the two occupants as the engine cut out. One, called Murphy, was the driver. Greenberg was the name of the other Mercy, and they exchanged a few comments about getting the job done and getting the hell out before the sec had a chance to get over to them.
We were lucky the other night. Those new guys are too good. Let's hope the big score really works.
The two Mercies climbed from the wag, taking in the surrounding area and judging it to be empty. They were wary, but a certain relaxation of posture indicated overconfidence. Everything told them that they were alone. Jack tensed every muscle in his body, every sinew taut and ready to explode. His eyes darted from one prey to the other, and also around the surrounding area to judge the best places to move, to duck and cover if necessary. Not that he would need it. The two Mercies had both looked into the back of the wag to remove the plasecs they would need for their bomb when Jack moved. Although his clothing was dark, it was only the shadow of cover that had kept his startling white face and stringy white mane out of view. He leapt from his hiding place, and it seemed to the two men as they turned at the sudden sound as though a white bird with a terrible beak and eyes of fire had sprung from the darkness. The sight was so unexpected and so terrible that it froze them for a second. And a second was all that Jack needed. The man named Murphy caught a leaf-bladed knife, thrown while in flight with such accuracy and force that it entered his left eye, spinning in the air and skewering into his brain. Greenberg's attention was then fatally torn between the apparition in white and his chilled friend. The albino landed on the hard-packed dirt floor and in one bound had flattened the Mercy against the side of the wag, Jack's combat boots thudding into his chest at the culmination of a flying leap. Greenberg felt one of his ribs crack as he bent against the metal edge of the flatbed wag at an unnatural angle, and he was unable to drag himself upright, his breath driven from him, and the ability to draw any more denied by the fractured rib piercing his lung. Using him as a springboard, Jack landed a little way back from the Mercy. Rolling, the albino was on his feet again and moving in for the kill against his almost defenseless foe. Greenberg fumbled for his blaster through the mist of pain, but Jack took his wrist in both hands and cracked it, leaving it limp and useless. The albino followed this with a straight-fingered chop to the open throat, crushing the thorax and leaving the Mercy unable to breathe. Greenberg fell forward, exposing his neck. The bones of his vertebrae stood out against the corded muscles of his neck, and it was little more than an exercise for Jack to take one clean chop at them, shattering those that attached his skull to the rest of his skeleton. Greenberg was chilled before he even hit the dust. Jack stood back, pleased with his work. The threat was over. Barely out of breath, he turned to see the refinery buildings explode in light and sound. Dean and Doc were making progress. But what of the others? Mildred kept her watch on the far side of the storage tank, remembering the action she had seen there previously. It was a good place for the saboteurs to come, as it was sheltered from view if there was a patrol on the near side, taking in the pipeline as well as the tanks. Although any wag would have to come the long way around to tackle the tanks in this way, it would be worth their while as they could buy valuable time installing bombs and booby traps. But this night, there was a booby trap waiting for them. Mildred had a secure place in the shadows between the two tanks. There was nothing but metal at her back, and it would be impossible for anyone to take her from behind. The same was true of both sides. The only way anyone could come at her was from the front. Therefore, it was the only direction in which she had to focus her attention. Mildred heard the wags come in from along the blacktop, heard them separate and go in their differing directions, and waited for the one that she could pick out as coming near to her. It looked as though the wag had three occupants. They weren't easy to spot as the wag came around in a semicircle and approached the tanks from the blind side, as the wag itself was outlined against the horizon. It was a jeep, like the one she had seen used before. Three against one weren't good odds. Ryan wanted one of the saboteurs kept alive, Hell, it'd have to be one of the saboteurs from the other wags as far as she was concerned. Unless one of these bastards survived by accident. Because with odds of 3-1, there was no way she could take a chance of trying to keep one alive and chill the other two. While she was paying attention to the live one, the others might get her before she could move. There was only one way to play this. Since she was a child, no one had ever accused Mildred of subtlety. Sure, she could hack that if it came her way. If she had to be diplomatic and sensitive in the past, she could fake it. Sometimes you had to, like in her pre-Freezy days when she had been a doctor and had to handle people who had terminal illnesses or whose loved ones had passed away under her care. That was fine. But most of the time, being subtle, diplomatic, and sensitive meant kissing some poisonous little snake's ass, and it meant deferring to someone who would walk all over you given half the chance. It was a lesson from the pre-dark days that had stood her in good stead since she had emerged into the Deathlands. Mildred wasn't going to let these bastards even get out of their wag. She took from a coat pocket a gren that J.B. had given her for use in an emergency situation. She pulled the pin and stepped forward, focusing her eyes on the wag that was almost at a standstill. She took a firm stance, and without leaving the safety of her shadows, she threw the gren. It was a good pitch, hard and true, with just a slight amount of lift to it. It flew at the roofless jeep before the Mercies had a chance to register what it was, and clipped the top of the windshield just enough to break its path and momentum and tip it into the interior, where the men still sat. The gren went off in a flash of light and a roar of sound. Inside the wag, the Mercies didn't have a chance to realize what had hit them as the shrapnel ripped them to shreds seconds before the explosive charge triggered off the plasecs they had with them and ignited the wag's gas tank. Mildred looked up to see a smoking chassis and little else where the wag had been standing. She wondered how John was doing. J.B. was, in fact, a man whose almost infinite patience had been stretched unnaturally thin. There was little he could do in his position out near the blacktop that fed a side road to the refinery and well. A small hut there held building materials for the road, and the armorer had been able to secure a hiding place. But this supply hut was the target for this point, and if it was to be hit, he was directly in the firing line. He just hoped that the Mercies would want to lay a bomb and not just use a gren. If the latter was the case, then J.B. was dead meat before he had a chance to bite back. He was the first to see the wag's approach, five of them in convoy. There was something about someone in the leading wag that seemed oddly familiar, but he dismissed the thought. Let whoever got that wag deal with the problem. Then four of them peeled off the blacktop and down the side road, past the hut where he was hidden, and off across the desert to their allotted tasks. With the amount of grens he had on him, plus the M4000 and the Uzi, it was tempting to try to take them out as they passed. But before he could have gotten them all, his position would have been identified and bombarded. Better to let them pass. That had galled him, but now he sat waiting for the last wag, which still stood on the ribbon of blacktop. He didn't dare risk firing until it started its run toward him, as then the crew would just have to concentrate their blaster fire on the hut or pitch a gren at it to completely obliterate him. But leave it too late, and he would be blasted out of existence before he could pick them all off. Did they know he was in there? It certainly seemed to him that they were mounting a war of nerves and winning. The armorer felt sweat bead on his forehead and trickle down the bridge of his nose past his spectacles. He blinked as the sweat stung his eyes, but kept his Uzi set to rapid fire, trained on the wag. That was his best first-line defense. Finally, just when it seemed that his nerves were screaming at him, the wag began to move. He could only assume that they'd been waiting for the other wags to make distance so that they could time their raids in unison. Through the small window hole of the hut, the snubbed barrel of the Uzi stood out. If he let them get too close, they would see it and start to fire. But too far, and they would be out of effective range. J.B. blanked his mind. His grasp of weapons was so instinctive that he wanted to go with it and trust his gut feeling. Now. He squeezed the trigger of the Uzi and started to spray the oncoming wag. There were sparks as bullets ricocheted, and the wag swerved as the driver tried to take evasive action. But he swerved too hard, and the front wheels hit a ridge of rock at the side of the road. The wag tilted and tipped, the nearside wheels turning on air. Slugs from the Uzi sprayed the underneath of the wag, severing the fuel line and igniting the fuel. The gas flickered to flame, spreading to the tank and making it combust. The explosion was doubled in a fraction of a second by the Plasex that the WAG was carrying.